What is the buyer commission in the UK?
Nothing.
No 30-year fixed mortgages.
No, so we do...
US, we have MLS. Do you have a version of Zillow?
It takes us 140 days as an average in the UK to get a sale through.
You don't have part-time agents in the UK?
Part-time's slightly different for us. They might do 40% of the week they work, but they would work every single week still doing 40%. But we don't have part-time agents who really don't do it at all.
Don't let Michael Ketchmark here from the US hear about this whole thing you guys have going on here. Buckle up, because this podcast, you need to share with someone, listen a couple of different times. I'm sitting in the gym this morning. I'm not sitting, by the way, right, Matt?
No, you're
sitting.
Working.
You can vouch that I was not sitting in the gym. So Tom Ferry, Matt and I are in Orlando. Tom Ferry comes up to me and he says, hey, you need to meet this guy. This is Matt Nickel. He's a UK agent, 400 transactions a year. That's about 220 plus million in volume. Or is it pounds or million?
Yeah, million pounds. Yeah,
million pounds. That's it. So close enough, right?
Yeah, sure.
220 million pounds, but 400 transactions. And that's where we're going to go deep on in this podcast, because that's an amazing number. You said to me when we met, you're like, it's all about the volume. So let me just back up. I meet you in the gym.
Yep.
And I say to you, I say, what's the number one question as a top UK agent that agents are asking you? And then you thought I said consumer.
Yeah.
So you're like...
So a consumer asks us what our fee is going to be, what it's going to cost. But definitely the question over here is obviously from an agent's point of view, what do you do for a buying agent? What fees do you earn? And we don't...
Because I immediately say, hey, I know agents are thinking... what's going on with the buyer commission? And so this is why I wanted to have Matt sit down and do this interview, because things are changing in the American landscape very quickly. Mm. And there's a lot of questions about what the future would look like. And if you haven't studied or sat down with somebody like Matt before, you may not know what other markets, other countries, how they operate in terms of buyer commission, listing commission. It's very different than here in America.
Yep.
And so I'm not saying that what goes on in the UK will happen here in America, but I want to get your opinion. So first, in the UK, 400 transactions, your average price point is 400,000. I think that's important to make sure everybody knows as well.
Yep.
400,000 is around the average price, or 400,000 pounds. What is the buyer commission in the UK?
Nothing. Yep. There's no buyer commission at all. We just get paid as a selling agent on behalf of the seller. So we don't get anything, and we have to do all the work with the buyer as well. So we are showing them around the properties, carrying out the viewings, feeding back to the vendor. We have to do all of that.
So every buyer comes direct to listing agents 100% of the time, or?
Yeah. They'll always come direct to us. We don't have an MLS. We don't share our stock with other agents. We promote our own properties, our own listings. So the buyer has to come directly to us. So your team has to be big enough to be able to carry out all those viewings on behalf of your vendor, whilst you're obviously advertising all the other properties as well.
Okay. So no MLS. So when you're thinking through all these, because I'm going to rapid fire a lot of questions at you.
Sure.
When you're looking for differences between UK and America, okay, boom, check. Big difference there. US, we have MLS. And the MLS is... while they're going to go through some change, not going away, right? And so do you have a version of Zillow?
Yes. Yeah, it's called Rightmove. There's a second and third. There's Zoopla, and then there's On The Market, which has just been bought by CoStar. So I think CoStar are big over here, and they're going to spend $46 million over there now on the English version. But Rightmove is the portal that everyone will go on to. That's where every agent will list. Costs us probably about £120,000 a year to advertise on there. So you've got some big...
120,000 pounds to advertise. Is that because you're doing so many listings, you're doing 400 sales, or is that...
It's per office, but also if you want to have the best branding, if you want to have the pop-ups and all the landing home pages and all those bits and pieces, or valuation inquiries to come through, you'd need to kind of be at the optimizer package. And that's where...
You're talking 10,000 pounds a month.
Exactly. That's what it is. Yeah.
Does that get you 20 listings? What's that get you?
So it would leave you with postcode sectors. So if you lived in an area where your postcode was WR9, anyone who wants a valuation in that location, and there's only probably a handful every month, they would send the request in. It'd be three selected agents, we'd be one of them. So we'd get the contact details to be able to contact them. But it doesn't give you a guaranteed list, and it's just another opportunity.
Owned by CoStar?
That's not. CoStar own another brand called On The Market, which has kind of been, it's been a third place portal for a very long time. But I think CoStar have seen an opportunity, and I wasn't on The Market until I found out that CoStar bought into it. So now CoStar bought it, I think, with, you know, the way that they're advertising through the Super Bowl and stuff like that. They're obviously a big business to be associated with.
And they bought a third or fourth place portal, whatever you want to argue, homes.com. I mean, maybe really a domain is what they bought. And they're turning that into, here in America, a potential contender, obviously. And their web traffic's been impressive. But the first model that you mentioned, where you're paying for placement, is essentially the CoStarHomes.com model that agents are now learning of here in America. It's like, okay, you're listing your lead. Well, that's going to come with, if you want your listing to have the best placement, there's going to be a monthly fee associated with that. You've been dealing with that world.
Forever. Yeah, forever. Since I began 20 years ago, it's always been, and Rightmove have got the market sewn up. So it's good there's going to be competition, but as portals go, every consumer, every vendor or buyer out there in England is going on Rightmove. Even people that have sold and lived in a nice new house now and they're very settled, they'll still be on Rightmove. They still have the app. I think everyone's kind of still attracted to properties and they keep searching through it. So it's important.
So when somebody goes on Rightmove and they call you and they say, Matt, I want to see 123 Main Street. And then you're like, well, I don't have the listing of 123 Main Street. What do you do?
They wouldn't call us, to be honest.
They wouldn't
call us to see that. No.
No, there's no buyer.
No.
In your market. Or this isn't exclusively all of UK that operates like this, or do you think all of UK operates
I'd say it's all of UK. Yeah, definitely. I mean, there is probably in London, there's a few buying agencies, a specific role that people have taken. But really that's not even 1% of the market.
Nobody would ever call you and say, Matt, I love what you're doing in the community. You've been referred to me, I'm buying a home and I want you to represent me through the process. No. Nobody would ever do that.
No, not at all.
In 20 years, has it ever happened?
I mean, it might have done. And all I would have done is I'd put them in touch with a selling agent myself, contact the agent. I wouldn't necessarily go and accompany the appointment or anything like that, but I might do the negotiation for them, but only maybe if they were a vendor of mine. So if they were selling their property with me, they'd get that as part of my service. But there's no incentive from a buyer's point of view, even if they kind of think we're the best thing to deal with, like best people to deal with, they would just tend to go direct. It's just the way it works.
It sounds like maybe this has happened a handful of times.
Oh, or? Yeah, minimal.
Minimal. So literally, we're talking about a 0% commission on the buy side.
Exactly.
In your world.
Yep, never had any commission from a buyer. The only time we do is if it involves land. So if we're doing a land acquisition and a buyer's coming to purchase a plot of land from ourselves, then it may well be if the seller hasn't instructed us, we can say, look, we're not being retained by the seller on this. You need to pay us an acquisition fee. But those will be, again, a handful of times.
So the buyers are really representing themselves, or as agents, are you representing the transaction? Do you represent the seller?
Yes, we're representing the transaction because the seller will have their solicitor, the buyer will have their solicitor. So once it gets to a sale agreed, which obviously is the point where we negotiate up to, the solicitors are then involved with doing due diligence and inquiries and responses to searches and bits and pieces. But up until that point, the buyer actually needs the agent, but we're not getting paid a fee for that. So they know that we're getting paid by our sellers, and that's where our motivation and our...
Are you signing any agency with the buyer at all? Are they signing an unrepresented form?
So
is that not even a thing?
They could view three houses with me on a Saturday, four with another agent, three with another agent. They don't sign with anyone. They go and view what they want to go and see. Mm-hmm. And so we're obviously acting on behalf of our seller. That's the contract we've got with our sellers. And we'll be phoning them on the next day to get feedback and try and get an offer and get it underway.
If a buyer feels like they're misled, and I'm not sure if this happens or not, but a buyer, you know, goes under contract, they end up closing on the house and they feel like, geez, I was misled to believe, you know, that this was in great shape or, you know, the roof was newer or whatever. And it just, maybe those would be covered in an inspection, but certain material facts about the house, they were led to believe one thing.
Yep.
And what's their recourse there? They didn't really have any representation. Do they then go after the listing agent?
No, I'd say it's very rare. We do have a property ombudsman service. So if if there's discrepancies like that, then they obviously want to get them checked out. Agents are responsible for obviously the marketing of their property. Property Misdescriptions Act, they've got to be very clear and upfront about the property. Everything they know, they've got to be able to
disclose. Like
disclose
here.
Exactly. Yeah. But the onus probably is more so on their solicitor than us, because their solicitor has to represent them, not just for the mortgage.
The list is, say this again.
So their solicitor. So a buyer will have a solicitor. So if you're buying a house from me.
It's like disclosures.
For us. Solicitor. Yeah, so it's, okay. Yeah, so okay. It's like a lawyer. I'm not sure what you'd... Okay. Oh, like an attorney,
it's
I guess,
like an attorney
here.
Or a title company.
Exactly.
Okay.
So a buyer will have a solicitor that they'll pay a fee to. The solicitor, essentially, on the day that we agree the sale, receives the memorandum of sale. That's the terms of the sale that we've agreed, within any inclusions that we've got in there, the price that was negotiated. At that point, they then have to do the journey with their solicitor, whilst the seller also does their journey with their solicitor. So my sellers will have a draft contract they'll send over to the buyer solicitors. The buyer solicitors will start to raise inquiries. They'll do searches. You mentioned about inspections. We do a survey. So for either their mortgage purposes, or if they wanted to have their own independent survey, they'll have a survey. But again, so the surveyor will have the liability insurance on, and it's on them. It's not what we told them or anything like that. It's what they've then found out.
So the solicitor in US, you're thinking, if I'm on a title state, I'm an attorney state, the buyer's working with that person. And they're responsible to review that due diligence.
Okay.
Is that how that works with the solicitor?
So yeah, I mean that's exactly. I mean, the solicitor has to be very, very confident that what they're buying is the right thing.
Yeah.
They've answered, or they've had all the questions. They asked some silly questions, but they need to know that they've asked all those questions.
Does the solicitor have a law degree?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So this is attorney title for those that are in that kind of a market. So what's the fee that buyers are paying the solicitor?
Very little, probably about £1,000, £1,250.
Per deal?
Per deal, per purchase.
And then is there a title, if they're using a mortgage, is there some type of title insurance that they're now paying to the solicitor? Do they own those title companies or no?
No, there wouldn't be. No. I mean, there's land registry, which is the kind of the place where the title deeds would always sit.
Yeah.
And it's online now as well, so it's available. But there's no additional fees for any of those bits and pieces. They might have more money if they're buying a leasehold property where it's a leasehold as opposed to freehold, but that might be another.
That's a whole nother track. We don't want to get into that.
No.
No 30-year fixed mortgages.
No, so we do 2-year, 3-year, 5-year typically. I mean, the term for a mortgage is about 30 years, could be 25, could be 40, but it's not term as you would know it. I mean, right. I've been hearing
it's
about
not
how
fixed for 30 years. Like
no,
us.
And the fact that we have to kind of go back in and remortgage every 2 to 5 years, you are obviously risking it that the rates could have changed and gone up and down. Whereas, as I understand it with you guys, you can tie into a 15-year fixed, but then you can refinance at different points if you want to.
Any, so
if
yeah, the rates, really any time, if it, if
which
it,
is incredible, yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah. Now, here's something I think. So that's a big difference too when you're looking at differences between the markets. The 30-year fix in America is the only country that exists, and it's how a lot of baby boomers in particular over the years have built so much wealth through that product.
Got you.
So if you're a listing agent, like, you know, you're an agent, which is a listing agent in your world, just 400 listings a year, are you also doing any mortgage for these buyers that come to you direct? Hey, I want to buy your property. I want to go here, Main Street. Are you now also saying, hey, I can supply you with the mortgage? Are you wearing two hats?
So we have independent brokers that will do the mortgage for the buyer if they want it, but they'll just pay us a clip. They'll just pay us a small amount as a referral fee. So it's not really.
That's different.
Okay.
That's much different. So you're getting a fee from the mortgage broker. So you have 400 listings.
Yep.
Now we didn't even get into the commission. What's the commission?
So we will be around 1.5%, but in England, the fee's probably between 0.75 to 1%. That's what most agents will go out.
England prices are going to be higher. Your market is £400,000.
Yep.
Prices are lower. Your commission's 1.5. It's 0.75
even in our patch. So in our area where the average price would be in that range, agents against us will be doing 0.75 to 1%.
Oh, you're just happening to be 1.5.
We're driving out a higher fee.
Offering more and you're driving a higher fee, which their higher fee is 1.5% of £400,000, not something else.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you're monetizing those 400 transactions, it sounds like, through the lender. which is very different. We wouldn't be able to do that here, but you're doing that through the lender of a straight fee for referrals?
That's it, yeah. Well, we do a percentage of what their broker would earn from the mortgage. So if they're doing insurance for them, like life insurance, building in contents, and all those bits and pieces, and also the, going down a rabbit hole again, but doing the product fee for the mortgage, we will earn 25% of what the broker gets.
Wow. And there's no, we have this thing called RESPA where you have to, you never heard of RESPA.
No.
You have to be RESPA compliant. Wouldn't even be able to do that here. Now, if you had two licenses, there's a theory going around that maybe as things shake out with the commission lawsuit, there might be agents that are getting licensed. That's a whole other rabbit hole. I haven't really explored that too much, so I don't really want to get into it. Are there other ways, and this is, might be something agents want to think of right now, okay, I want to build my listing inventory. Certainly listings are power. They've always been power.
Yep.
Are there other ways you're monetizing 400 listings aside from what we just talked about with the mortgage and the insurance? Are you monetizing those 400 units in any other way? Is it local vendors? Is there anything you're doing to monetize those?
The solicitors that we recommend to people, we have three on our panel. So every buyer needs a solicitor, every seller needs a solicitor. We've got three that we can refer to. So we also make a referral fee from that as well.
Wow. Don't let Michael Ketchmark here from the US hear about this whole thing you guys have going on here.
No, it's to be honest, you need to do it as well, because as we say, you know, based on a team of 36 people.
Yeah, we didn't even get into
transactions.
That. Yeah. So listen to Matt's business, and this will get into the next, I think, eye-opener for many. Matt is doing 400 units technically as a agent, an independent agent who has 36 people on his staff. Okay, now 18 of those, I think, were
sales. Yeah,
sales agents. They're paid a salary.
They are, yeah.
As well as the 18 that are on staff. So all 36 are paid a salary. So think about that in US world. It's 36 W-2s. These are employees that are being offered health benefit, all those different things. The 18 sales staff are getting a little override on the sales that they're involved with, but they're salaried employees. You're what we would call a rainmaker. You're going out doing the deals, making the connections. You're bringing the 400 transactions in through the door along with your marketing staff and all of that. Yeah. But you're going in on those pitches. Are you going on 400 pitches?
Since April, we have uploaded new and sought after courses, content, and tactical assets for your business into the BAMX platform. Not articles behind a paywall that only pontificate to you what you should think and do, but education that actually shows you how to do what you need in today's market. Every day, we continue to add more content into BAMX and our private Facebook community. Content that works. Content that our members have exclusive access to daily. It's why over 1,500 of you and climbing have joined us in BAMX. It's also why tomorrow's price is guaranteed to be higher than today's. That's called inflation. Do not wait any longer. Use code BYRON and join the thousands of agents taking their business to the next level today. Code BYRON for 10% off. See you in BAMX.
Me personally, okay. No. We've got, so each office, we've got three bricks and mortar offices, and each location has a valuation manager and typically a second member of staff that could also do the listing. Last year we went out to about 1,800 valuation appointments. So you have to go out to a lot of listings.
1,800 to get 400?
So 1,800 would net back to probably, you'd convert about a third. So one in three you'd get on the market. So you maybe get, you know, six or seven.
So you have 600 listings. Let's 600 call it, listings. And then you sold 400.
No. So we would have sold more than that. We sold about 540. But again, another eye opener. It takes us 140 days as an average in UK to get a sale through. Ours take 100 days. But because there's no 3% at the beginning, there's no money down at the start other than what you're paying your solicitor to start the process. A buyer can withdraw from the transaction up until the exchange of contracts, which is really at the end once all the due diligence and everyone's satisfied. So we would do 540 gross sales and probably net back to around 400 sales. So we've had 140 wash away, unfortunately, in the process. Spent a lot of time on them, but...
Money.
Yeah, money, effort. I mean, we'll resell them and stuff like that, but we have to have two full-time senior sales progressors who would do all the transaction chasing, because you're chasing up and down the chains. You have to phone the agents above and below. Solicitors, you have to keep pushing away at them as well.
How many people are involved on your side on one listing then?
Quite a few. So typically we get a lot of come list me calls. I learned that term when I came to Vegas last year. A lot of come list me calls. So people contact us to get a valuation on their property or listing appointment on their property. The listing manager or valuation manager, as we call it, if they instruct us, then we've got the photographer going out and all those kind of videographers and the team involved with that. Then you'll have a sales consultant who'll be doing all the viewings, doing all the showings, because obviously we have to do our viewings for our vendors. Then you'll have a sales specialist who's phoning their database and arranging those appointments. And then once the sale's agreed, it'll then go into the hands of the sales progressor. And at the same time, you've got a sales manager who's in charge of the office and looks after it. So you've got 6 or 7 people in each transaction, really.
How many, like the market that you serve?
Yep.
A million people, 2 million, less? What
less than that. It would be in the region of about, it'd be less than 200,000. Yeah, because well, there's three locations.
You have huge market share then.
We've got strong market share, yeah.
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 All right, so 200,000. How many agents? And this is gonna be another eye opener. There's far less agents in this world of no, it makes sense, of no buyer commission world that you operate in. There's far less agents. So give us 200,000, community.
Yep.
How many agents?
So over those three locations where I've got offices, you've got, in terms of bricks and mortar offices, if we were saying actual offices, you've got 3, maybe 12.
Well, you have 3 offices.
Yeah. But I'm thinking of
total market, competition included, your competition.
In terms of offices, probably about 40. Bricks and mortar offices, but obviously I've got 18 staff that do sales within my 3 offices. So yep. if you multiply that by probably,
do you think I'd that's say similar to most offices?
We've got more than most. We've got more than most, but we have to do the volume because.
So you're talking about a couple hundred agents, maybe.
Yeah, I'd say yeah, 250 maybe.
250? Yeah. Am I on? Yeah, 250.
It's got to be in that
agents.
Region. Yeah.
So to serve 200,000 now, I know. You can typically call about like 20,000 agents per almost like 3 million. So what would that be? About 7,000 per million. Break that down. It's going to be more than 250 for 200,000, right? It's going to be like almost 1,000. And you go to different states like the one we're in here, Florida. I mean, everybody's an agent.
Everyone's
basically.
Got a license, yeah.
Everyone's got a license.
And I heard about talking to Matt Farnham yesterday in Vegas, the amount of agents out there as well. It is incredible. But I think because our fees are the way they are, we don't have people that are happy doing 1 or 2 transactions a year because that wouldn't be enough in terms of an earner for them. They couldn't do that.
You don't have part-time agents in the UK?
No. No. I mean, part-time is slightly different for us. They might do 40% of the week they work, but they would work every single week still doing 40%. So we don't have part-time agents who really don't do it at all, no.
It wouldn't make sense to pick up 2 or 3 transactions a year in the UK and have a license for that.
I don't know how they'd do it without being able to use things like the portals. So if you've got Rightmove advertising accounts you're going to need, it's going to cost you a lot of money as well. Right. So,
and yeah. You would never employ somebody that's going to do 2 or 3 transactions because you're paying them a salary.
Well, I am thinking because we are kind of very bread and butter. We sell a lot of transactions, but it's the kind of mums and dads at the school gates. It's the normal family market that's moving quite a lot. So the prime market's kind of got a big opportunity for us. And I think maybe self-employed in that level would work because then the fees are going to be upwards of £10,000, £10,000 to £18,000. So someone could do that self-employed. They wouldn't be on it all the time. They wouldn't have to do 5.5 days a week, but they could still earn quite well out of it.
In London, I got to imagine when the price points get higher, because that's one of the most expensive cities in the world.
Without doubt.
As those price points get higher, I gotta imagine that there are buyers that are willing to pay a buyer fee for great representation.
There are. That's where the buying agents do step in London specifically. You've got a couple, but very, very rare, few.
But you don't find that a £400,000 buyer is
no representation. No,
willing to.
Oh well, no, and it's. I suppose it's a shame, really, because I know that if I was acting on behalf of buyers and earning a fee from it, that probably like a lot of the people that watch and listen to this, you could save them some money. It's not just about making sure it's the right property. It's you could really save someone some money because the art's in the negotiation. And I found that that's something that we have done. So I have sometimes represented a vendor when they wanted to go and buy a property from another estate agent. If my seller's having, If my seller is having to take an offer lower than their asking price and they're struggling to kind of consider it, I would say, well, let's go and make that reflective on the next one. Let's go and save that money on the next one.
And then
one.
You negotiate for them get the listing done, but not to get a fee on the other side.
I won't get anything on that, no.
You're just going to handle that negotiation to say, hey, let's go ahead and accept the offer we have on our listing over here.
Exactly.
And you find that when you're negotiating, you get a lower fee, you know, you get a deal done for them in a way that they can't either. And so as the listing agent, you have buyers directly negotiating with you.
Yes.
Not with the seller. No. They negotiate with you and you're negotiating, you know, all day long. Your team, you and your staff.
Yep.
You're going to 1,800 pitches, valuations. You're getting 600 of those.
Yep.
And then you're negotiating on those 600. You're negotiating every day. You're negotiating two deals a day that are really coming together, you know, on working days. And so now you're at such a clear advantage over a buyer who negotiates maybe once, if they're not in sales, they're negotiating once every 5 or 10 years, however often they move.
Yeah, very true. And even the salespeople, I don't think they're great negotiators because if they're emotionally attached to it, then that's it. Even if they're great at sales in their own business, they'll struggle when it comes to trauma. At the end of the day, we know how our bread's buttered. We know that the seller is paying us. And so our whole motivation is making sure that they've got what they need out of it, transaction-wise.
And at 1.5%, fee in the UK, which is your average.
Yep.
Commissions are negotiable there.
They are. Yeah.
Commissions are negotiable, but that's typically kind of where you're falling based on the averages. Everybody's going to have an average, whether they're negotiable or not, right? You're finding probably representing the seller that you're motivated to make buyers pay as much as humanly possible for those properties.
Yeah. Last year we averaged 101.4% of asking price.
And so that's a big motivator. If you're getting 101.4%, they're paying you that's why you're able to get more than the market on the commission.
That's our point to our sellers. So an agent is going to charge you 1%. And if they sold it for a national average is like 96% of asking price, you've got your 1% plus they only got your 4%. Well, they sold it for 4% less than it should have got. You're losing money. You're giving money away. So you go on the market with us at 1.5% or 0.5% more, but we achieve 1.4% more than anyone else could really, or maybe 5% more than most others are achieving. We've paid for ourselves easily and they put some more money in their pocket. So that's the pitch.
Do you feel like in the UK buyers are, obviously they're not being underserved, they're not being served at all, but do you feel like this is a setup that is bad for buyers in the UK?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it means that they will struggle to get a property at the price they would prefer to pay. Underserved possibly because if you're a first-time buyer, it's your first time you've ever done any of this, you've really got no one to lean on. The agent will give, you know, trusted advice and they'll be honest and they'll support you, but you haven't got someone who could say, look, I think that's way too much money. You need to pay less than that because that's not what we're here for. We're acting for our sellers anyway. So, I'd suggest, and I know obviously it's the big thing that's come in or being discussed at the moment over here in America, but there is a problem where buyers don't really have as much support as they could if they were paying a fee for it.
And here with everything, how much have you followed what's going on here?
I've sat at dinner tables and heard a little bit more about it over time. So yeah,
you've been hearing.
You can educate me probably better than most. Yeah.
Well, it's a long education, right? But there's about 20 lawsuits happening right now. Some class action, a very big one in Missouri that went to, you know, jury, had a verdict. We're talking billions of dollars in fees. So there's changes. DOJ, Department of Justice, wants to uncouple, which, you know, uncouple meaning the listing agent being able to offer compensation for the buyer agent, not only uncouple the offer from living in the MLS, but uncouple that from even being allowed in law for a listing agent to pay buyer agent, which leads many to believe that buyer agents are going to be negotiating directly with buyers.
Yeah.
And when I look at £400,000 or less, those are typically the buyers with the least amount of wiggle room to start with to put a deal together.
Yeah.
And so there's, you know, there's a lot of belief that they won't have the extra money to pay directly out of their pocket to a buyer agent. So then they're going to have to try to negotiate to the seller through a purchase on getting the seller to pay, which could get, maybe the DOJ won't even allow that. Or maybe they're going to try to finance if, you know, NAR can get Freddie and Fannie to say, oh yeah, you can wrap this into your loan or some type of seller credit. You know, there's all these theories out there, but you're seeing the 400,000 pound buyer not only not even consider it, but never even like bring that up as a way to save money.
No, not at all. No, it's, and I can see, I guess the issue is if a buyer doesn't have enough deposit, if they scraped around here in America, if they scraped around to have enough deposit to be able to purchase the property, to then find more on top, it's going to probably scupper some deals, I would have thought. And I think that's, I don't want to sound bite saying short sighted, but I don't know how that's going to be in the best interest of most buyers, because it might limit some of the stuff, some of the things that they can purchase if they can't get a buyer agent to represent them and help them to get what they're trying to achieve. So.
So maybe I'm being ignorant when I say this. I believe that the American consumer is probably different than any consumer in the world. I may just be an ignorant American for saying that, but I do think the American consumer is different when it comes to service. We tip differently. You know, there's a lot of customs in America that are, you know, unlike any other country. If the DOJ uncouples this, just your outside perspective, knowing your market,
yep,
you travel to America, you know, you're friends with Americans. Do you believe that buyers are going to pay buyer agents out of that? Just your belief. Do you think buyers will pay buyer agents out of their pocket here in America in the future?
I doubt that they would want to. I don't see that they'd want to. And I think that's why here for Elite Retreat and hearing about kind of listings being the thing that you need to really focus on, I think there is going to be that concern that if you've worked as a buying agent for the full length, you know, you've got to start considering getting the fees in from another way, because I think some buyers are going to go, nope, not interested in that then. I'll go straight to the listing agent.
How do you get listings? I mean, you're getting 1,800 valuations.
Yep.
You have 600 listings you're signing. You're selling 400. I think almost everybody listening to this would say, I'll sign up for that. How do you generate so many listing opportunities?
We do a lot in our community. We do a market update that we deliver to 26,000 homes in each of the locations. We've got 26,000 properties that we kind of focus on. So probably no dissimilar to what you're, you know, educating people with the visuals. We're actually putting into a document, two-sided. I've had coaching now from Tom Ferry Group for the last 2 and a bit years, and I've picked up loads of different things. But we're a strong brand. We've got a lot in our community. We're kind of known very well for kind of being rooted in what we do. Our success is, you know, 101% of asking price, or in addition to asking price, you're kind of getting a lot of people repeat referrals, sending people your way.
20 years, right? But trading, if you were going to start today in your market,
yeah,
you're saying, hey, we do a lot in the community. Would you start there? Like, I've just got to be so embedded. I've got to be a local voice. Would you try to break through in a way, you know, locally that you stand out? Would you go and buy billboards and a lot of, you know, static ads? Would you go social, you know, what would you do if you're restarting today?
I think if I was going to restart today, I think it would be a lot more on the social. I think you can do education pieces on the areas, because everyone wants to know what their house is worth. They want to know what's going on in their market. So you can just do educational pieces on that. I probably would say community is still an important one. So the local school groups and stuff like that you can support. And just putting yourself out and about, I think that's probably part of it. Physical locations, some people don't need bricks and mortar offices. They want to work from home. But I think having a physical presence is important on the high street, because people do want to drop in and see you. I guess you'd probably have a reputation, even if you're working for a competitor before setting up on your own, you'd probably already be known in the location. And hopefully you would have, for the right reasons, been known, you know, that you are a good agent. So the reason I set up Nickel & Co. in my own name is because I'd worked for a competitor for 5 years in Worcester, which was the city that I began in. And then I left and started up in my hometown, but I wanted to do it the boy who went to school there, the lad who played rugby, and people kind of knew me for those reasons. So, that was 15 years with that business now so far, and it's gone well. And now I think you talk about flywheels and stuff like it. It just feels like it's in a good spot. So we have to kind of add on top. And you know, why else would I fly out to a place like this to come and learn from the best? But like, you do have to keep adding to it because everyone's trying to catch up with you. They're always trying to catch up.
Well, this is fascinating stuff. What did I not ask Matt? Let me know in the comments, because maybe we'll have to do a follow-up to this. Sure. Because I think this is me eye-opening for a lot of agents. If you are a UK agent and you're like, hey, Matt didn't mention this, or I feel like I, you know, fees are different here, definitely share that in the comment. I'd love to see how many UK agents we have following this podcast. Or if you need a UK connection, we're definitely going to link you up, Bobby. I think Bobby wanted to chime in with a question. Bonus question here.
Okay, yeah, fine.
As if Byron's asking, Matt, just from an American agent perspective, in terms of you see here on TV, you know, big time agents on reality shows and all that kind of stuff, is the perception of the job of a real estate agent different in the UK, especially for somebody who's young and looking to get into the business?
Oh, that's a great question.
So
the perception of the UK consumer to the agent, where a lot of times, because of that part-time, that thing that we talked about here in the US, it's like, used car sale, you know, you have that.
Yeah.
Are you more seen as a financial advisor? I see in your Instagram bio, you use the word consultant.
Yeah.
How does the consumer view real estate agents?
You say car salesman, that's probably kind of the category that we would be pitching normally. Not everyone's cup of tea, but I think there's been a lot of work over the last 10 to 15 years for agents to probably do more in their community than most other businesses, most other companies out there, most other industries, to be honest, because we are probably seen to be doing more than most. And I think that's not just specifically me. I know agents up and down the country that do that. I think people want to listen to us. I think they want to get the advice. They need to have the general uptake on what the market's doing. And we try and provide that as well. So mortgage rates, I've kind of learned from you guys, you know, make sure people are getting updates on what the rates are doing. Bank of England base rate being held since August. What's happening with you just have to keep feeding that in, basically. And it just helps people to make an educated decision then when they want to go and make a move. And especially buyers who don't have any representation, they do need that little bit of a, what's going on with the market? Am I buying at the right time? Do I wait another month? Do I wait for 4 more months? You've got to support them on those.
So know everything about your business. Keep giving that value for free.
Yep.
The big takeaway I had here, and again, love to know in the comments what your biggest takeaway was, but the big takeaway I had was, if you are embedded in your community, if you are a leader in your community, if you're doing content in the community, you're going to be fine no matter what. I mean, 400 listings, everybody would sign up for that. There's always going to be salespeople. There are salespeople in the UK today. There are real estate agents in the UK today.
Yep.
There are listings. There are listing portals. And there are sales happening. And there, in this world, there's far less competition because there's far less agents. Not that it's not competitive. It's very competitive. You're going on 1,800. So maybe others are going on 1,500 and whatever. It's a very competitive environment to get these listings. Your close rate is 33%. So that tells me there's competition. They're interviewing multiple people.
Definitely.
But you've eliminated the part-timers. So it's a different world that you're operating in. And that to me is the big takeaway. The ones that are embedded in the community are still winning in that world. Not saying that anything that's happening in the UK might be reflective or might not be reflective of what the future looks like here in America, but we will need to be ready for all situations. Love to know your thoughts in the comments. Matt, this was fascinating. I hope this starts a friendship, because I may want to pick your brain.
That's
some
fine.
More.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm sure I missed some questions, but thank you for coming on.
No, brilliant. Thank you for having me.